You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
When Shakespeare wrote Something Wicked This Way Comes, he might have been anticipating Alan Cumming's wicked solo version of Macbeth. But could even that visionary playwright have imagined such a daring undertaking? Mr. Cumming plays all the roles in the Scottish play, but by the end of the show, you'll swear that you've seen the Forest of Dunsinane move and witnessed the armies of Macduff and Macbeth clash. Alan Cumming won a Tony for his performance as the Master of Ceremonies in Cabaret, a role that he will return to early next year. He's perhaps best known these days as Eli Gold in The Good Wife. Macbeth is at the Ethel Barrymore Theater until July 14th, and I'm very pleased that it brings Alan Cumming back to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. How are you?
I'm well. I feel guilty having you here. Shouldn't you be asleep, maybe watching a few SpongeBob episodes to relax and get your mind off of that grueling performance you go through?
Yeah. Well, I should say, first of all, there are two other people in the show. I play someone who plays nearly all the parts in Macbeth, but there are two other people in the show, Jenny Sterling and Brendan Titley. So I always feel bad when they say it's a one-person show, because there are really three people in the cast.
But you're doing most of it.
I'm doing most of it, yes. They would admit that too. It's a grueling undertaking. But it was a funny thing. We have a Wednesday night off, so I've actually driven in today from the Catskills, so I feel I come to you as refreshed as you will find me of a week.
Well, I also want to make the point that you play all the roles in Macbeth. There is a frame that brings those other actors in.
Well, yes. It's set in a psychiatric unit, and I am a person who is brought in at the beginning and admitted, and they're a doctor and a nurse who are sort of, you know, admitting me. And then as the story goes on, you know, in the scene with Lady Macbeth, there's a doctor and a nurse observing her. Well, they then become that doctor and nurse observing me whilst I'm being Lady Macbeth.
So and your character is Fred at that point.
That's the name that I use for myself, or we used in rehearsal to differentiate when I'm being the person who is the patient who's brought in, as opposed to. So I think I am Fred playing all these parts.
And now, how did you come up with the idea of setting the performance in a mental hospital?
Well, I didn't. I mean, it really wasn't my choice, and it was sort of a happy accident. I mean, I wanted to do. Well, I wanted to work with John Tiffany again. I'd done The Back Eye with him, and we talked about some other stuff. And he's the great director who, you know, has got Once on Broadway right now and lots of other exciting things coming. And he and I had collaborated. And so I said I wanted to do Macbeth, but I wanted to do it where I would play Macbeth one night and Lady Macbeth the next. And the actress and I would swap, because I thought that was an interesting thing about there's so many gender and things about masculinity, and all the women in Macbeth, there aren't that many of them, but they're always chiding their men about their masculinity. So I thought that'd be interesting to swap around, much in the way as, you know, Romeo and Mercutio are sometimes swapped by actors. So we did this reading like that, where I swapped with an actress, and everyone else, you know, the other parts were played by other people. And I didn't think it went that well. And then, Andy Goldberg, who's the other director of our production of Macbeth, he was there. He had always had an idea to set Macbeth in a psychiatric unit. So then they came to me and said, "Would I like to play all the parts?"
Because this is the second production of this.
Yes, we did it last summer. It originally was at the National Theatre of Scotland in Glasgow. We did it at the Tramway, and then it came to the Lincoln Centre Festival for a couple of weeks.
So this is the third production, actually.
Well, no, it was all one thing. It was sort of we did it in Glasgow and immediately came to New York. So I guess it's the third venue, yeah.
Do you think that Macbeth and Lady Macbeth can be seen as two different parts of the same person?
I do, and I'm not alone in that. Sigmund Freud actually wrote a very interesting essay about that, which is fascinating when you consider how everything that Macbeth fears in the play originally about what they're going to set off and do happens to Lady Macbeth, and all the things that Lady Macbeth wants and hopes for, Macbeth gets. And when they are not, the moment they are not together, they just crumble. And it's a really fascinating essay, that Freud's essay about it. It's been very helpful to me.
Many Freud and other psychologists have all written extensively about Shakespeare because, as you point out, Shakespeare was one of the most psychologically insightful writers to have ever lived.
Yeah, he is amazing. You know, there's so many things. And that's why this production, which focuses more on a psychological angle from a sort of more of a medical point of view, but, you know, there's many there's a reason why my character is performing Macbeth, and we find that out as the play goes on. But also, you know, there's so many things, so many Macbeth has hallucinations. Lady Macbeth is basically the first ever character in literature to have OCD. You know, there's so many. He predates the actual term psychology, or the, what we understand as modern psychology, by centuries.
The is this a dagger speech? Is an illustration of how obsessive
exactly.
of thinking and imagining will lead to a compulsive action.
Yeah, I know. You know, he. But then also, even Macbeth, in during that speech, understands voices. This is actually a dagger of the mind, a false creation proceeding from the heat-oppressed brain. That's amazing, saying I'm having this vision because I'm so overwhelmed with something else right now. That's incredibly ahead of its time.
Now, why didn't Macbeth just wait to see whether the prophecies would be fulfilled without any action by him? Was Shakespeare having it both ways? Hamlet gets criticized for acting too little and thinking too much, and Macbeth for preemptively taking fate into his own hands.
Well, you know, I think Macbeth has... Lady Macbeth, there's a bit when he says, before he goes off to meet, before he sees Lady Macbeth, he goes, if chance will have me king, why chance may crown me without my stir? You know, it all seems to be going that way. He's been named Thane of Cawdor. They said I'm going to be king. Maybe I'll just leave it and it'll happen.
Yeah.
But then Lady Macbeth, that's when she kind of comes in and takes the bull by the horns. And so, you know, I think if Macbeth without Lady Macbeth would be a very different play, a much less interesting play, of course, but the whole point is that the witches trick him into thinking that this thing can happen, and then he decides, you know, when certain things go wrong, he brings his own actions into it, and that's when you don't mess with the supernatural.
Did you try to assign each character a distinctive voice or physical gesture so that the audience will immediately know who you are?
Yes. I thought that was fairly important. I don't wear funny hats or anything. I'm basically Lady Macbeth and Macbeth kind of sound the same. They're, you know, but I feel that my a lot of it is in movement and about my posture and gestures. Banquo, I have an apple. Macduff is I have a blanket. You know, it's very simple things like that.
What's it like doing love scenes with yourself?
It's not so bad, you know. At least you're having sex with someone you respect.
Like.
Yeah.
What about playing a Scotsman? There have been a few Scot actors who played Macbeth, but it generally is played with your standard British accent.
Mm.
Do you think that changes the tone of the play?
I think perhaps what it kind of highlights is how good a Scottish accent is for language like Shakespeare's. It's much more guttural, it's much more onomatopoeic. And I think, and actually when I did Hamlet years and years ago in London, there was a kind of a sort of sensation in one of the newspapers when this old fuddy-duddy critic said that, you know, Alan, there should be a sign outside the theatre saying you might not understand all this, what's going on, because this actor does it with a Scottish accent. And then
you were playing a Dane.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. What was fascinating was this linguistics expert professor came forward and said, actually, Alan Cumming sounds more like how the actors in Shakespeare's time would have sounded, because the received pronunciation of a sort of posh British accent nowadays has been so influenced by a Germanic thing. Over the past couple of centuries by the, you know, our royals marrying into the German world. Now we have this very weird kind of received pronunciation accent, which actually I feel doesn't work so well with what Shakespeare wants to happen and the music of Shakespeare's language.
But if when you think from an actor studio point of view, having an actor with a really good Scots accent play a Scotsman... I read that the Scottish press has been trying to make a link between a Scottish actor playing a Scottish king and the campaign for an independent Scotland.
Yeah, it wasn't really the Scottish press. I think that was just one crazy... I mean, what happened was when I was doing Macbeth, I also spoke at the launch of the Yes campaign independence campaign for Scotland. I'm very pro-independence, and I was there and they asked me, and I'm friends with the First Minister, so I went and did that. And of course then someone picked it up and tried to, you know, this Macbeth is not a very good advertisement for Scottish politics,
right,
Scottish,
I mean,
independence.
If you want to have a Scottish king, you don't really want him to be Macbeth.
No, I don't really think that's a good way to go.
Now, I've read that you insist on saying Macbeth out loud in the theatre and refuse to call it the Scottish play. Mm-hmm. Are you courting disaster? Didn't Jonathan Slinger, who was playing it in England recently and also poo-pooed that superstition, break his arm during the production?
You're playing all the roles.
You're taking on even more.
I don't mean to laugh at Jonathan Slinger's arm being broken. I mean, I think people get injured. The theatre is dangerous. You can injure things, you know, all over the place. I've got new bruises every day when I do this. But my point was, when you're playing nearly all the parts of Macbeth, it's going to be very, very difficult to communicate. If you have to say, oh, when Lady, the Scottish play, goes over here, or when, you know, I just thought it was ridiculous. And I looked up really what the origins of the tradition, superstition are. And it's actually, the reason that Macbeth is bad luck, saying it in a theatre is bad luck, is because it was such a popular play that if someone said it, it probably meant that your play that you were in was going to get turfed out and a production of Macbeth is going to come in. So I actually thought that was highly unlikely that was going to happen at the Barrymore Theatre right now.
I read that Eleanor Drews believed that having a chimney sweep around protected the production from the curse.
Well, good for her. I must get a chimney sweep in my dressing room, all my staff.
Although, for all I know, you are even pushing the Scottish aspect of the accent. You are just brilliant on accents. Anyone watching you play Eli Gold, for example, and not knowing that you speak this way would never guess.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that's just what being an actor is. I know it sort of seems, I think the thing is when people see you on television regularly, they kind of just assume that's what you are. And I have to say, this is kind of an insult, but I mean it in a kind of positive, well, I don't mean it in a positive way, I mean it in a kind of a, well, here we go. American people don't have very good ears for accent because it's rarer that you hear other people's accents than other people in the rest of the world.
Oh, I think in the past it was really obvious when a British actor was playing an American. Today it's almost impossible.
Yes, but that
something's happened.
I mean, though, that if you, what I mean is, I think probably people get better at accents because they're more exposed to American things and you can hear it more often. But what I meant was that I find it hilarious that I am on The Good Wife, blah, blah, blah. But then I see someone and they go, oh my God, you're Scottish. And I go, yes, haven't you ever seen me on a talk show? And they go, yes, loads. And then I go, but well, I don't talk like Eli Gold on the talk show. And they go, yes, you do. And so it's this funny thing that people just assume you're American if you're part of the American culture. And I mean, I think that's fair enough. But it also it's quite funny.
Well, I appreciated your rap voice when you performed the accidental homophobe song as a duet with Stephen Colbert.
Yeah, that was such fun. I loved that. Yeah, that was a real hoot. I just went in and kind of in an hour, and we kind of did that. It was such a gas, and I loved that thing. You know, I didn't quite know what when something goes viral means, and I do now.
Now I understand that your professional debut was in Macbeth.
Yes,
playing the good guy.
Well, that's a matter of much debate, Mr. Lopate. I played Malcolm, who actually I don't even think he's a good guy in the play because there's a whole chunk in the England scene when he kind of tests Macduff in a really weird way that I don't think it augurs well for his kingship. And also, you know, historically, Shakespeare shifted it all around so that the family of the descendants of that line would be the noble ones, which were obviously connected to Elizabeth I. And actually, the Macbeths were really quite nice. But what was your question?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
All right.
I was asking, what I was leading to, was it more fun to play the bad guy than the good guy?
Malcolm, for me, is actually, he's kind of a doll. He's a doll, and I do him with this funny, what I do that's really, probably people don't pick him up on so much here, but I loved hearing it with the audiences in Scotland, is that the royals, I make them English. Because we have this, I have this thing I say about, in Scotland there's working class, middle class, and English. And so I got to kind of make, Duncan for me is an amalgam of various English, sort of Thatcherite politicians who were kind of Scottish but pretending to be English. And so, and Malcolm is just completely English.
Now, you had to cut out an awful lot of the lines, including some favorites, like "What you egg" or "You fry of treachery."
Yeah.
Was it painful to get rid of them?
It was always about precision and clarity. And we have an extra narrative on top of the play of, you know, why this man is in this hospital and what his retelling of the story is doing to him and what he's remembering about his reasons for being there. So it was always with an eye on that. I mean, things like the porter, we cut, because I tried, you know, it's like one of these things that, oh, the funny bit when the guy comes on and makes light of everything after the murders, it's the most unfunny 3 minutes on the, you know, on the stage ever. Because it's like doing, it's like contemporary gags from London 300 years ago, and nobody makes it work. And I just thought, I'm just not going to do it. And anyway, what's great is if you cut that right after the, when Macduff comes on and talks to the porter, but right after that Macbeth comes out and Macduff says all this stuff about the terrible things that happened, and then he sees Macbeth, and then Macbeth goes, mm-hmm, 'twas a rough night, and the audience burst out laughing. And the whole point of the porter is to give the audience a release and a bit of lightness after all the murder stuff. So I think we're able to do that in one line. So we're always very conscious of keeping the same music of the play, but sometimes you can just cut out the boring stuff.
And now you're going to be doing Cabaret again?
That's, I've heard that as well, but you know, I haven't heard an official announcement.
Oh, they haven't
about it.
Signed you and well, you know, offered you money?
Well, there's money's being proffered, but I would always wait for the official announcement before I would comment on such a thing.
Our congratulations in order. I understand that Mayor Bloomberg is giving you a Made in New York Award for your contribution to art in the city.
That's true. Yeah, I'm so excited about that. I feel it's such an honour. You know, I feel that I came to New York and I made it my home, and I have this. I feel I've had this whole other rebirth in New York, because I didn't come here till I was, didn't come to America at all until I was 30, and then I came to New York when I was like 33 to do Cabaret, and I've just, it's been so lovely to find a new home and to do Macbeth, which is a product from Scotland, the National Theatre, to bring that here and to find an audience, you know, it's been amazing. And to then be, to have this honour from the city. And it's actually funny because my publicist said it's kind of like getting an OBE from New York. And I did get an OBE from the Queen. So now I said I'm like an OB, I'm almost like an OB. YGN, you know what I mean, that doctor.
Or maybe an Obi Kenobi.
Or maybe Obi-Wan Kenobi, yeah.
Macbeth is at the Ethel Barrymore Theatre until July 14th. And Alan, thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thanks. Nice Alan to see Cummings. You, Leonard.